It's time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Hello, everybody. It's Alice Alvey today here replacing Dave for just today. He is out getting his daughter off to college, and we are very excited to try and fill his very big shoes here. He does such an awesome job. So we will do our best, and I am very excited to have Andy and Joe here and Alan offering all their support. So this podcast, as you all know, is created by mortgage professionals for mortgage professionals. We are so grateful to have you as a listener, and we are committed to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime, anywhere. So today, August 19th, our show, what we have planned for you is that we are going to be playing an interview that Dave did with Bronwyn Morrissey at the MBA Empower event. And then Andy, Joe, and I are going to talk through, and Alan, of course, are going to talk through a little bit about what that means, because Bronwyn speaks very well about how this event is really designed for giving women the support and what that means really to the industry as a whole. We also are going to add on and talk a little bit about today's current market conditions. There's a lot going on in the market today, and want to make sure that we have the opportunity to just share with you Andy's insights and Joe's, since they've got a lot of customers that they deal with and how they're coping with the changes in the industry today. So stay tuned for that interview. I also want to thank our sponsors. Of course, number one, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America and the Community Mortgage Lenders of America. We also have Black Knight. In today's competitive market, it's critical for lenders to deliver decision quality business intelligence to the right employees at the right time. So to answer this demand, Black Knight has developed the actionable intelligence platform to deliver data that drives growth and reduces costs. So to learn about the intelligence this powerful solution can provide, visit blackknightinc.com. Also, one of our sponsors is Open Mortgage, a leading buyer of reverse mortgage loans and home of the top LOs in the country. Finastra, we also love having Finastra as Fusion's mortgage bot solution that automatically addresses compliance issues while delivering enhanced borrower satisfaction, giving you increased productivity and a greater market share. And of course, our latest sponsor, Rezex, warehouse lending and a division of United Bank. And you'll want to listen to Ken Jones' interview that Dave did back in July 22nd. It was a conversation on warehouse lending and their inspections. So really great information for those of you who need to work in that space. Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative, both are mortgage co-ops, creating competitive advantages for both lenders and vendor members. Velma, an efficient mortgage marketing and email platform, and the Knowledge Coop, providing easy and fun training for mortgage lenders. We also have Vidyard. They're an online video platform for business. It allows you to communicate internally with LOs and with borrowers on what's needed and do so in a more personal and effective way. And A1 Assist, powered by Conversica. So listen to Roman Vinfield's interview that was July 15th. On marketing your mortgage business with artificial intelligence. And of course, finally, a big thank you to Andy Schell and Joe Farr, who have been with me and Dave since the very beginning, which is now, I think, creeping up on 12 years. So thank you for being here. And Alan, who's joined us over the last couple of years, has been a great addition. All right, let's hear from Rob Van Raphorst and what he has for us this week with the MBA Mortgage Minute.
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, HUD posted a reproposed draft of FHA's annual lender certification. An earlier draft of the certification was originally posted this past May on FHA's drafting table. This latest proposal represents a further improvement in the annual certification. MBA issued a statement commending HUD for its efforts to create an environment in which lenders can operate with clarity and certainty regarding both FHA's requirements and potential penalties for noncompliance. Also last week, HUD issued FHA's long long-awaited final rule on revisions to condominium project approval requirements. The final rule implements a number of improvements that will expand the availability of FHA financing for this important affordable housing sector. They include extending the project recertification cycle from 2 years to 3 years, facilitating FHA financing in projects with phases, allowing more mixed-use condominium projects to qualify, and restoring the ability to do spot loans in non-approval projects. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Rob. You know, and next up, I think we have Les Parker's Mortgage Market Live segment.
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by Amesworth Advisors. Into Hong Kong, they're torn. Into China, they're thrown. Like a bull without a home, a lender short on loans, riding on the storm. With China breaking its promise to keep Hong Kong autonomous for 50 years, it shows the world its animus towards the free world and trading partners. The market doubts a U.S.-China deal happens this year. Both the U.S. and China's economies are slowing. Who blinks first? Emerging markets are repricing assets. Argentina leads the way down with market reforms lost and its peso dropping 20% against the dollar. We are now all
riders on the storm.
These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
That is great. So Les, every time I hear Les's piece, I always have a flashback to the 70s, and Riders on the Storm did that again. Amazing information. Absolutely check out the tmspotlight.com to learn more from Les and to go back and listen to that again, because it was full of great information on, I like the part of lenders short on loans. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in our Hot Topic segment. All right. So next up, we have Joe Farr with our mortgage rate update. So Joe, glad to
have
you live on the program today. Hi.
Yeah. Sorry, I missed the last couple of weeks, but it's been a crazy couple of weeks. This morning's not so much, so MBS prices are down just a little bit, but the stock market's recovering there, and it's up about 300 points. No economic data came out today. But looking at last week, Alice, another good week for mortgage rates. MBS prices improved another 15 basis points, and that's up since the middle of July, about 125 basis points. And mortgage rates have improved. The actual rates are down about 40 basis points over that time period to really about it's the best level in years. And the drivers have been concerns about global economic growth, trade, and geopolitical conflict, along with expectations for additional central bank stimulus. The ECB last week, an official with the ECB, called for, and this is, quote, impactful and significant stimulus to be discussed at their next meeting. So that, along with some talk about Germany adding stimulus, it's a central bank theme these days. Now, looking at the U.S. economic data that came out last week, it was really pretty good, but didn't have any impact on MBS prices because it was being driven by all the other events. The data that came out, especially retail sales, exceeded expectations by a lot. We saw CPI rise a little bit more than expected. The housing data was okay. Single-family starts and permits both exceeded expectations. The home builder confidence grew a little bit in August to match its best readings of this year. And they reported that traffic was up due to the recent drop in rates. Manufacturing data last week was mixed. The only concerning data that came out last week was the Consumer Sentiment Survey. It's a mid-month measure. It fell in August to the lowest level in months. The survey responses cited the concerns about the Chinese tariffs and indicates a concern for the U.S. economy given how strong retail sales were this month, and it was a July measure. Now this sentiment survey is a real-time measure, mid-August measure, so the consumer may be getting a little less comfortable. Now looking at the week ahead, Alice, there's not much on the economic calendar to consider. We get July existing home sales on Wednesday, and a small increase in that's expected, and then we get July new home sales to come out on Friday, and there's no change expected there. The big events may come from the Fed. The Fed minutes of the July 31st meeting comes out at 2 o'clock on Wednesday. We've seen that be a market mover. And then the Jackson Hole Economic Symposium begins on Thursday. The theme of the symposium is challenges for monetary policy. And one of the speakers is Fed Chair Powell. He's going to speak on Friday at 10. So really, there'll be a lot of headlines coming out of Jackson Hole, and especially as not only the Fed, the U.S. Fed, but other central bankers are there and express their thoughts about what to do in the upcoming months. And we will talk a little later about the sort of the macro view of all the issues going on in the market these days. But that's my report for this week.
Thanks, Joe. You know, Wednesday at 2 and then Friday at 10. And I do remember in years past, we did get news out of Jackson Hole because isn't that an annual meeting, right, for them? Yeah,
it is. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to talking more about that in our Hot Topic segment, because I do think a lot of folks today really want to know, what should I do today, right? Their macro information from the markets then still is something I have to say, all right, well, I'm still getting a ton of refi business. I still have to worry about portfolio retention and how do I manage all that business and how long is this going to last? So we'll talk more about that in our Hot Topic segment. So
okay.
Great. Thank you. All right. Looks like we head off to Scott Gordon of Open Mortgage to talk about the science of sales.
Scott Gordon here with a bit of sales science. Last time we examined the first element of a story, a relatable hero. Today I want to examine the next essential element every story needs, a relevant challenge. The challenge is the obstacle or opportunity your hero faces. For example, a company, one of your competitors perhaps, could be the obstacle. A particular situation could be the challenge. These are gold mines for scenario-based stories. The economy, another gold mine for stories for millennials and seniors alike, robbed of their ability to purchase a new home if it were not for you. Please note, your challenge does not always have to be negative. An opportunity, for example, could be the challenge to which your hero rises. Without a challenge or obstacle, your stories are boring and useless. Let's take a look at a series of escalated challenges. Sally goes to the store. Who cares? To buy some groceries. Still don't care. For her 5-year-old daughter, Carolyn, who is sick and hasn't eaten in days because her home was robbed. Their food and emergency money were taken, and her paycheck from her second job will not be deposited for another 3 days. Okay, now I care. It's up to you to understand the purpose of the story and scale the relevant challenge with what your relatable hero is capable of, as well as serving the overall message of your story. Challenges face both you and your borrowers on a daily basis. Make note of them, harness them, and make them your own to turn yourself into a story-selling machine. Remember, crafting effective stories is a science. There are formulas to follow that will yield measurable and proven results. It's not magic, it's the science of sales.
Thank you, Scott. And I find I would need to go back and listen to that a few times as I'm trying to craft those stories, because they are an important way to communicate. So great tip there. All right, I get to introduce myself now. And here I go. This is Alice Alvey. I am a CMB, and I am VP of Education and Training here at Union Home Mortgage, which is a fabulous company, and I absolutely love working here. Every day we are creating new education, and Bill is committed to growing this company through future leaders program, leadership programs for even our college interns and our existing partners. So lots going on here over at UHM. What I want to make sure we get a chance to touch on briefly are two things that Rob has already brought up, but I think I can make sure you get a little bit more detail on it. First of all, the Federal Housing Finance Agency did publish their final rule on the credit score model. If you recall, over the last couple of years, we've actually talked about, in particular, the Vantage score and how that could potentially open up the door for more borrowers. Well, now that FHFA has actually published the final rule, what this means is that Fannie and Freddie will now have to start opening the door to look at additional credit score models. There's a lot of work here still to be done before we are not all solely bound by the FICO model. There is right now, the regulation is going to require a 4-phase process for validation and approval of a score model. And so they're talking about they need to solicit applications, They need to go through initial submission reviews, go through a full assessment of each of the systems, and really walk through how that would work within Fannie and Freddie and the industry, so really an enterprise-level assessment. There's a lot of homework, a lot of procedures for them to put in place, so we'll watch this, but I think it is really far out before we may see any improvements in it. And don't forget, one of the key points in there was there couldn't have been any shared ownership in the model between any one of the credit reporting agencies, and VantageScore has that problem. So we'll be watching this to see what scoring models may emerge as alternatives. The other big piece is HUD proposing and FHA publishing their new handbook. The new 4000 now holds in it the new condominium changes that have been talked about briefly earlier in the program. The one I want to focus on is the single unit approval. A lot of folks were hoping, hey, can we get a true spot condo approval? It's a seasoned project. Everything is stable in the project. Can't we just skip all the approval requirements and just get this one unit approved? So that all starts on page 484 of the the HUD 4000, where it talks about the single unit approval. We're not quite getting that super streamlined automatic approval. So for originators out there, just a heads up, you'll still have to walk through getting a condominium certification. The project needs to be well seasoned, well over a year, and there are going to be standard requirements to still get the documents. Still look at the financial stability of the project, still make sure there are no legal issues that are outstanding on the project, walk through balance of commercial use and owner occupancy percentages. So all those typical things you're used to with condo reviews are still going to exist. What will be easier is you don't have to go all the way through the DE condo approval process or the HUD condo approval process for the entire project. You're just focused on a few key metrics and making sure, obviously, our project is seasoned and our subject property is okay. So that's really the main thing. It goes into effect October 15th. So we all have a little bit of time to make sure we understand the regulations, make sure we understand condo projects that may have been before, approved before or after that. So all the new requirements go into effect for projects approved after October 15th. We're still double-checking if existing projects that are due to expire in 1 or 2 years will get a 3-year. My understanding is they'll have to walk through their new renewal, but when they get their renewal, then that will be for a 3-year period. There isn't a retroactive, but we're just still double-checking, still reading through the fine print with HUD as usual, and we'll report back if there are any changes. So instead of saying, Dave, back to you, I'm saying back to me. And we're going to check now in with the Knowledge Coop.
Hey, Nathan here from the Knowledge Coop. Are you a teacher or coach, either professionally or aspirationally? Then let me share these words from Ben Franklin as inspiration. Tell me and I forget, teach me and I may remember, but involve me and I learn. Benjamin Franklin's famous quote has since been proven by science and educators, and they now call it experiential learning, and it's sage advice for anyone in the mortgage industry. So do you have some training to do? Then check out the Knowledge Coop for fun and easy video-based training for mortgage professionals out there, and it's all powered by a smart digital platform.
Thanks, Nathan Nottingham. Again, to learn more, make sure that you go to knowledgecoop.com. They have a great mortgage platform. It's powered by their smart digital platform. So definitely worth checking out to keep your knowledge flowing throughout the company. All right, now we get to turn to Alan Pollack with the tech update. So Alan, welcome to the show.
Alice, thank you for hosting today and introducing me. You're doing a fantastic job. And I wanted to leave you with something memorable on your first day. The first part is, did you know that a penny cost 2.4 cents to manufacture? And so it sounds that's an expensive proposition, right? Yeah, it's expensive. So it'd be easier to have a podcast, which today you do. And did you know that there's over 30 million episodes of podcasts as of June 2019? So you are one of 30 million as of today.
Wow, thank you. Well, it sounds like a penny costs more to make, just like, you know, it's a housing finance loan, a bond loan costs more to originate.
Right. Yeah, that's great. So a couple quick things today. You know, I like what I've been following your comments on the VantageScore model. I think a lot of people talk about it. You know, I think a common topic out there is Credit Karma. Credit Karma, a lot of people talk about why when I pull my credit on sites like that or that site, it seems higher than it is if I go to the actual credit rating agency. And what it turns out is they use a blend of the VantageScore model and some other analytics, so it's not always exact. So that's something that, you know, some people consider it a higher score. It may be a new trend of how to really assess credit. Anyways, I see it as a big technology opportunity. So for anyone that's not already looking at the VantageScore model, but thinking about credit models and how we determine eligibility, that may be a place where technology can help move that closer. So we'll see what happens there, but I wouldn't be surprised. A couple quick things in the news. Digital mortgage company Better.com, they just closed $160 million in funding. They're hoping to hire about 400 people. If you recall, they had about They did about $375 million in mortgages this year. They did a capital raise earlier, and they're hoping to hire about 400 people. They're looking to expand partnerships and scale their platform to continue making it easier. They hope to close over $4 billion this year. So there's a lot of investment there. I think Goldman Sachs is one of the investors in that. So if you're interested to see what a lot of money can do in a short period of time, you may want to take a look at Better.com throughout the rest of this year. And, you know, we always talk in technology. It seems that there's a lot of focus on the borrower and then the back-end efficiencies. Well, I think the gate, where the gate opens with back-end efficiencies, a lot of people, depending on the channel of business, by the way, Alice, a lot of people have been talking about OCR. And so there is three announcements that actually came in the same week, which I thought was kind of funny, of three OCR platforms. Now, these platforms do more than just OCR. Most of our listeners probably work with these companies today, but all three announcements, I might as well cluster them together. The first one, LoanLogix, my prior company, they just announced that they are powering technology behind Freddie Mac's new tool. It's in automating their automated servicing transfer. And so these technology enhancements are going to support their co-issue exchange. Ultimately, if you think about it, it's analyzing documents and data. Documents and data touch many hands, and so finding that single source of truth, LoanLogix is empowering Freddie Mac and that partnership to do more with that data and that automated workflow you get from the data. The other one is VisionNet Systems. They've announced an integration with Ellie Mae. I think they've been working on it for a long time. The press release says they call it Visi Loan Review, and so now they're embedded inside of Ellie Mae, and they give the ability to, you know, efficiently and securely process large volumes of documents while reducing operational costs. So to me, it sounds like a broker uploading a package or a correspondent channel or a due diligence or a post-closing review, those kind of areas. VisionNet has some great technology. You want to check that out. And then finally, the last one is a company I used to work at, LoanComplete. It is a product of Fiserv. They are integrated into the Fiserv ecosystem. And they have just put a release out that they've enhanced their OCR engine with machine learning, and they're enabling an auditable exchange of data, image documents, and electronic records. And so if you think about all three of these vendors, they're all sort of doing the same thing. Very important aspect of the onboarding process, validating data. So if you're not working or you're thinking of working with an OCR technology provider, there are benefits there. You want to check that out. And then what I wanted to sort of finish off on today, you know, we've had this topic I've been talking about, you know, where to use technology. I introduced that new acronym, which was DWTUT. I want to talk about the National Housing Survey special topic. It's a quarter one topic. It just came out. And it's called Shopping Around for a Mortgage Pays Off. And what it really says is that while mortgage is more than one third said that they shop around for a mortgage, the average home buyer obtained two mortgage quotes. And that's the important aspect. When we look at the amount of loans that we originate each month and then the amount that we actually close, the gap in the middle is, you know, what you can call your abandonment rate. Now, you may have denied some may have withdrawn, but ultimately the difference hasn't decided to move forward with you. And so the survey really talks about how borrowers have gone out, they've gotten at least two quotes, and those quotes have given them a better rate and better negotiating power on top of somebody who didn't do that, which would be obvious. But then, you know, a little more research, and I found there was a Forbes article about the same topic. And remember, Fannie Mae had put out a couple months ago that borrowers still need to be knowledgeable about the process and use technology in those areas to empower a borrower to know more about what those myths are. And so this Forbes article is really interesting because what it talks about is a couple items regarding that Fannie Mae article I just brought up. And what they really say is that borrowers they are still confused, and they're making the process more confusing. And they think, for example, that credit scores need to be higher than what they really are. They also think that down payments need to be higher. They also think that a lower down payment is going to be a higher rate. So there's a lot of confusion. We're so used to the process of originating a mortgage that we forget that borrowers are brand new. And we forget that the things that we're so old in our industry to us, they still need. And really, you know, what I wanted to mention is that as the rest of the year sort of tails on and then tails off, we've got two amazing conferences left. And there's a couple others. One is the Mortgage Collaborative, really three, is going on right now. Fantastic conference, great content. We also have the Digital Mortgage Conference, which is there's going to be a lot of great new technology solutions. And then we also have National MBA. And that conference is filled with meetings. There's folks that you're going to find things out that you didn't know. It's how do we invest in each other? How do we fix what's going wrong? There's a lot of great content. And I'm talking about technology. The rest of the business is also fantastic content. What I'm going to be focused on, and I mention this because we talk about how to decide where to use technology. I'm going to be focused on one is what vendors do I work with today that have technology that I'm not yet using? A perfect example is I was talking to CoreLogic last week, and they've created an endpoint that allows you to have one-to-many, right? That's something that as a lender and a technology provider, you want to know about because you want to enable more of those systems, not only to be automated, but to talk to each other. And the more efficient we can make them, the easier those solutions are we can bring to the front end. And so really what today's topic is let's look at the data, let's talk to our loan officers, let's talk to the borrowers. Let's figure out how do we help make those borrowers feel more certain that they're going to get a great deal and they don't have to shop. How do we give them the tools that we may see that really aren't that important anymore but are important to them to help them understand that the process is not as complex and we're here to help them. We've got great mobile apps going out. We've got great mobile-ready systems. We've got efficiencies on the back end, but how do we bring those things to the borrower? And so as we look at the rest of the year, and we look at where to use technology, let's focus maybe on the simple things, the things that have the most impact to help make all those other efficiencies really matter. And with that, Alice, I'm looking forward to the rest of today's conversation, and your hosting abilities are top-notch, so thanks for driving us during today's podcast.
Well, thanks, Alan. Wow, you covered a lot, and so I filled up a whole page. OCR is absolutely something that, you know, I think all of the top lenders, including Union Home, you know, take a look at to see where is the best place that you can fit that into the system. And those three that you identified, it does clearly seem like that's all in the back end where OCR has been able to support lenders at this stage in its evolution. And then
right.
To your closing point, just we really have to figure out how to go deeper and really look at the areas that are going to impact the consumer. And I love what you said about making sure that we've got borrower certainty, how to get them to shop less, right? They're going to love my quote and stick with me. So thank you very much. Lots of great insight there. So, all right. So that everybody, that was Alan Pollack with TMS. You can reach Alan at tms-advisors.com. So thanks, Alan. He is here every week with our tech update. All right, so speaking of technology, let's move on to Finastra and check out the Mortgage Bot Minute from Dan Putney of Finastra.
There was a study done just a couple of years ago by Carlisle and Gallagher that said 79% of bank customers go somewhere else for their mortgage. And it revolved around having the technology.
It doesn't have to be this elegant, crowded screen. Sometimes the quicker the buttons you can just click on there to get to it.
But I think the key thing that we're finding is it's that overall experience. And you look at the millennials, and they're a very educated group of people. We also look at the millennials, we all think of them as these young kids running around with iPads. They're not. They're 28 to 42-year-olds now. These are people working in your branches.
And once you have it on mobile, Eric, you know how you can track that.
Absolutely. We look at it every day. We went ahead and implemented the Mortgage Bot Mobile at Bank Midwest, started from nothing, and right now we're taking about 40% of our mortgage apps via the mobile.
And, you know, when you look at Mortgage Bot, just talk about experience. So this has been around for about 20 years. We've got close to 1,500 customers using it. And I know there's some other vendors out there, but they've got about 50, maybe 100 customers. The technology here is phenomenal.
So, folks, what you just heard was Dan Putney. He is the Managing Director of America's Community Markets, and he's telling the crowd about the Mortgage Bot app. And then they even had a Finastra customer, Eric Schwab, VP of Mortgage Lending at Bank Midwest, tell everyone about his bank is using Finastra. So thank you, Dave, for that great clip, the Mortgage Bot Minute. That sounds interesting. And you know what? They're actually getting 40% of their loan applications via the Mortgage Bot mobile app. So that's amazing. You can also go to Lickin' on Lending and click on the advertiser to see this video about Finastra's Mortgage Bot solution. All right, I am so glad that we now get to go to Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor. He is here today. Thank you, Andy. How are you today?
I'm doing great, and you're doing awesome. Thanks for filling in for Dave as he lifts boxes, moving the kids out of school and, you know, to their next destination. So today I was going to talk about two things. One, we've got our recorded conversation about Empower, and then also I wanted to mention about rates and volatility just as a teaser for what we're going to talk about later in the show. So to begin, though, thinking about Empower, I do a lot of work with business design. And so when we talk about a business, or we talk about a product, or we talk about a person, I work with some young people and helping them design a career path, you've got to think about who, what, where, when, why, how. Just like if you're going to write an article or write a research topic or something like that, who, what, where, when, why, how. So when we convert that into business lingo, it kind of comes out strategy, structure, technology, finance, accounting, people. Begins with strategy, ends with people. You got to have all the pieces in the middle for it to make sense. And when you're talking about a career path or a career design, you have to have a destination involved. So the strategy piece of this is destination. Where are you going to go? The strategy is about design, leadership style, in business it's organizational design, workflow design. But as a person, it can also be preparation, being able to present yourself. Alice is a master certified mortgage banker. So you can present yourself with credibility as a stamp that comes on top of your resume. So being prepared is really important as well. So technology is important in a business. It's sort of the infrastructure, the fuel. It's the power of the rocket ship. Of course, finance and accounting. Finance is more about where's the money going to come from to fund the business, and accounting looks at what you've done. So as a person, you need to know, make sure you're not spending more than you're making. How much money would you like to make in your career? What are your career goals, and how do you hope to get there? What positions generate the revenue to support the lifestyle that you would like to create for you and your family? And then having a budget, that's accounting, tracking that how much money you're spending is less than how much money you're making. And then in a business, it's about people. You got to have people to drive the ship. It takes people to make business happen. So it's important to surround yourself with people who are like-minded and can help drive the ship, drive the rocket ship, drive the mortgage company, drive any business, launch any product, or help any person become the best version of themselves they can be. So that's a little bit of the basics behind some of the Empower stuff we're going to talk about a little bit later.
You do the five W's, so who, what, where, when, how. You know, have you ever added a second one of how much? You actually talked about that. How much am I going to make, or how much is it going to cost me? And I remember David Lord, we worked with on a couple of projects, did the visual system of work, and he called it 5W2H, who, what, where, when, why, how, and how much.
That's great. I love it. Who, what, where, when, why, how, squared. How and how much. I'm going to add that. That's good. I like it. Well, and the thing about being in mortgage lending is that the upside is more than most industries. It's a person with the right skill set and the right training and the right opportunity can make crazy amounts of money. There aren't very many businesses where an individual can make $1 million a year over time. Starting, maybe it takes 8 years to get there. But even if you're on Wall Street, I mean, that's amazing income. And there are almost every single mortgage company we work with, there are at least a handful and sometimes a bunch of W-2s that are seven figures, $1 million, $1 million, $2 million, sometimes $1.5 million. Mortgage originators can make, in the past, crazy amounts of money. And it's probably not going to change that much because the gain on sale is going to come down some and the commission is going to have to adjust accordingly. But it's still going to be a crazy amount of money that people can make in, even if it's just $500,000, just $500,000 compared to $1 million.
Yeah.
but people, you know, people are happy with $100,000. People are $200,000. I can do anything I want. And that's all available in mortgage lending. And you teach people how to get there in your job, you know, well, most of your career, actually. So it's really important to know what are the steps and how do you get there. So I'm glad we're talking about that more in the Empower segment. But as a quick transition also to the other topic, which is some of the rate issues. One of the things that we're dealing with today is, and I'm just going to barely tease this up because I know Joe's got more content, and that is we're experiencing rate volatility that's extremely high. We've always had volatile rates, but it's extremely high today, and the pace of change is fast. And we're also starting to talk about dipping against negative yields. Now, Joe's going to talk more about the inversion. I'm going to just briefly hit on negative. So what that means is what negative yield curve or negative yields mean is that in some markets like Germany and in Japan, people have a lot of savings. And you can convert your savings into cash and you can put it in your mattress. You can put it in a big box and bury it in the backyard. You can invest it in different things, but you oftentimes have market risk when you invest it in things. You can buy real estate. There's tons of stuff you can do with your money. But a lot of people like to hold money in a liquid form, which is a bank account or some sort of ready liquidity, able to be able to convert it into spend anything you want to spend it on. So that means you want to put it in a bank. But the bank can't afford to pay you anything because they're not going to make any money on the money you put in the bank at all. And they have deposit insurance and other fees they have to pay for. So what happens is you put your money in the bank, but you don't earn any interest, and you have to pay fees to be able to have the money there. So today in savings accounts, it's like 0.25%, 0.0025%. And so that's little bitty bit about the money, but you can have negative yields when you pay the bank to hold your money so at least it's safe and in some cases insured. So that's that. Joe's going to talk about yield inversion when we get to that, but I wanted to mention that negative yield is possible and is happening today in Europe and other countries.
That's great, Andy. Thank you for teeing that up on both fronts, and we'll be circling back to both of those after we get a chance to listen to Bronwyn. So without further ado, folks, we'll be moving into our Hot Topic segment. So in today's Hot Topic, we have myself, Andy, and Joe, and we're going to be listening to a short interview that Dave conducted with Bronwyn Morrissey. Bronwyn is an executive business coach and CEO founder at BronwynMorrissey.com, and she has been in the mortgage industry for 27 years. She is very passionate about working with people to guide them into the new ways of approaching and thinking about business and life. I have worked with Bronwyn. We both spoke together at the education symposium that was held by the Mortgage Bankers Association at the national conference in October. I think we're on the docket to do that again this coming year as well. And we get a lot of great feedback. It was really great to get to know her and learn about her work. She speaks very well, is very relatable to the mortgage industry, and can really help move companies into that culture talk. So you're going to hear her talk a little bit about that. So Dave interviews Bronwyn to get her perspective on the Empower event, which Bronwyn has now attended for the third time. So she was there at the inaugural event. You can hear the enthusiasm that Bronwyn has for women to share their voices, and she also shares some really great tactics and habits for women to consider how to develop themselves personally and professionally. I hope, too, that the men who listen to this also recognize that a little bit about what Empower is. It isn't male bashing. It isn't, you know, men excluded. It is just about a support network, and I think Bronwyn articulates that very well.
I am excited to be here at the Empower event, and we have another person that just walked over and introduced herself. I've met her before in her previous life, before she became an executive coach, and her name is Bronwyn Morrissey.
Yes.
Perfect. Bronwyn Morrissey.
Yeah.
Good. Bronwyn, good to see you. The last time we met, you were with Arch MI, and we were at the top of a beautiful building in Boston and talking to David Gansberg and Andrew Rippert. And it was just a great conversation. I'm so glad you had a chance to come over to the booth and record some comments. I'm really interested in hearing what you're doing, but first, before we get into what you're doing, I want to hear also about what you thought of the Empower event today. Everyone's been exclaiming about it, so tell me about it. Your experience here.
My experience, so this is the third time I was at the inaugural in Boston, and we actually had a dinner too when we were there. And I went last year in Denver. I'm from Boulder, Colorado, and so I was lucky to also go to that event. And this event has been a really good, I'd say, reignition of the enthusiasm around the women stepping up and being more bold in mortgage banking in particular, playing big. How do we share our voices? How do we be proud as a group? And most importantly, how do we collaborate and support each other in doing that?
Yes.
Letting go of any competition or I'm better than you. And so it's been really, really great. And what I've noticed is, I mean, Mika was wonderful. What I'll say too is that Marsha, you know, obviously this is her baby and she's done such an amazing job and there's a lot of enthusiasm around it, right?
Right, yes.
And at the beginning when she opened up, she was talking about her sister and introducing that connection. And what I loved was she was vulnerable with us.
Yeah.
Right? She became emotional because she has such a strong connection with her sister.
Yes.
And I thought that was so inspiring for her to give permission to other people to share their true selves, to be raw and real.
I think anyone who gets raw and real in bearing things out, there's obviously raw and real can go in a wrong direction.
Yes.
I'm talking about appropriate wrong and real, where we're burying our hearts. And I think that's the thing that's so needed. We've gotten too stodgy. It's become an old white man's a good old boy school network, as we've heard numerous times. It's so good to see that is changing. And Marsha's initiative here with Empower is doing so much towards that.
It is.
I'm glad to hear you were talking about this as it's transforming. Or is it transforming lives, or is it really just opening up an opportunity for them to be bolder and empowering? What? How would you characterize it?
I think that this is the doorway for people to step through to begin their own journey of being transformed and empowered, right? This is where people can learn certain concepts. But what I see is that there could be a way for there to be further action from here. So in one of the talks today, one of the gentlemen was talking about in order to change our own behaviors and patterns, you need to, I think he said, repeat something about 21 times, which I agree. Like, how do you create new habits of us stepping out of our own ways of self-doubt and stopping ourselves, our lack of confidence or playing small in the world? Well, that takes doing something again and again and again. And so I think this is a great trampoline, if you will.
Great way to put it.
Yeah,
I like
for
that.
People to start to step into, how do I develop myself personally and professionally so that I can play bigger in the world?
Well, that's what you're now doing, is helping others do that. I want to get into talking about that. So tell us about the leadership and executive coaching that you're doing.
So it's been a really fun journey. Even though I was in mortgage banking for 27 years, for the last 10 or 11 years, I really did a lot of my own journey of how do I develop myself? I'm a lifelong learner, student.
Good.
I can't get enough of reading development books and personal development, professional development, leadership books. And so when I had the opportunity to start my own company almost 2 years ago, I really decided that I wanted to work particularly with women, and I also work with companies and their culture, as well as helping people with, really the bottom line with all of it is helping people change their perceptions and their beliefs and their thought patterns in order to be more powerful in the world. Where are we stopping ourselves?
Yes, and that's the key. Where are we stopping ourselves? Because more times, I dare say it's 80% us and 20% circumstances outside of it.
I believe that, and I agree 100%, because
I arbitrarily picked those percentages. Would you agree with those percentages or somewhere around there?
It's a high percentage. And let's look at this. Like, right, we're going into a market right now that's really challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are starting to get from a place of fear, scarcity,
something's wrong, there's a problem, they're going to be in either a victim mentality or a fear-based or an angry mentality. You cannot be creative and productive when you come from that place.
Exactly right.
If you're putting all the responsibility on all these outside circumstances that are happening versus taking responsibility for yourself and realizing that you have the power to do whatever you want, those types of people can take advantage in a market like this and be incredibly successful.
Yes.
When other people are kind of focused on what's wrong and pitting themselves and not doing a good job.
Yeah, I think that is really good. I think it's one of those things, how to be able to coach people through that. And
yeah.
What are the principles, what are the processes that you walk through in helping people be that?
Well, one of the things I do with all of my clients is I have them take what's called an energy leadership assessment.
Energy leadership assessment.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. And it's short. It's called ELI, so Energy Leadership Index Assessment.
Index.
And what it does is it is really a good indicator for people for how they show up, their beliefs, thoughts, and behaviors, as well as their energy around under normal circumstances, and it shows under stressful circumstances.
That's
and so it gives us, literally it gives us metrics for how much they show up in these different areas,
yeah.
7 levels of leadership. And
I love that, yeah.
And from there, you can really have a baseline when you're coaching people of making sure that they get out of fear-based mentality or victim mentality in stressful circumstances, and where they can really come from, how do I really look for the opportunity? And how do I get out of my own story about things are hard, for example, and have a more positive outlook? Like, there's opportunity everywhere. There's possibilities everywhere. We just have to start looking for them.
Yeah, that's so
and that's
true.
What I work with people
on. That's outstanding.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
So give us some success stories on what you've done. Do you have a story that comes to mind? I love the stories.
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things that I do is I was taking women on leadership retreats, actually, in the Grand Canyon.
Oh.
And there were
what
women.
What an inspirational place.
It's an amazing place. And when you're in a situation, like a physical situation like that, these are sometimes executive or leadership women, you still are bumping up against your fears, right? And so when they were able to apply being able to get beyond their physical fears around, can I actually hike in and out of the Grand Canyon all the way and get out of the Grand Canyon, to their lives, some of the women that have gone through that experience with me have completely transformed their lives.
Wow.
Like, one woman actually started her own business and is doing something similar where she's helping people get beyond their own fears. Yeah, so that's been a lot of fun. And then on the mortgage banking side, I've definitely have people who have either been promoted where they didn't think they could be, or I've had people that have also doubled their production because of the way that they are now perceiving the marketplace, even when things are quote-unquote challenging for them.
That's excellent.
Because they're looking at it from a different perspective. They know they can do it, and they're realizing that they're 100% responsible, not the outside external circumstances that are, you know, stopping them, which really they aren't.
We talked about being bold, being emboldened to step up and step through different things. Talk about that a little bit. When you are encouraging or coaching people to step through, what does that involve?
I'm going to talk about women, for example, since we're at the Empower event. So
that's exactly what
I do a couple things. I do women's tribes that I put together.
Women's tribes. I love it.
Yeah, it's called B-Tribes.
B-Tribes.
And B-Tribes.com. And then I do mastermind groups. And what one of the things that I notice the most is one of the disempowering things we do is our language. Right, there's some of the words that we use.
That's so true.
You know, it was mentioned today, using the word sorry, constantly apologizing for ourselves. Mika mentioned that, which I agree with 100%. And we're always diminishing ourselves. If you listen to some of the language, it's kind of surprising. Like, oh, you know, even taking headshots today, people saying, "Oh, I don't look good in front of a camera," or this or on that, negative things. And when we talk about ourselves that way, really, it can impact the way we think about ourselves and the way we physically show up in the world. So are we standing taller? Are we being small and we're crossing our arms and we're diminishing ourselves and knocking other people out? So there's that physical aspect to it.
That is the nonverbal and the verbal. I mean, we're sending signals all the time, communicating how we think of ourselves. you know, how we want people to speak to us. It's great that you're bringing this out. What are some of the things that you're seeing is the things that are imprison people from moving forward? What are those things that you help them through?
Well, it's always themselves.
If you could dive into that a little bit more. I'm really fascinated by that.
Yeah, a lot of it is the way we communicate with each other.
So it's that what you were just talking about. It is that communication.
Yeah, it's back to communication now, beyond like the physical,
right,
and the words we use. It's also a lot of times we set up expectations. We expect people to show up a certain way, but what we don't do is have a conversation with them specifically around creating co-agreements with them. So what that means is that, for example, I work with managers, and they may think, well, I told, you know, my employee Joe to do X, Y, and Z, but then they didn't actually do it, or they didn't do it in the time frame I thought they would do it.
Right.
And then the conversation is, did you actually talk to them about what the requirements were? Did you say it was due by Friday at 5 o'clock?
Right.
And did you agree to that? You know, they think it's understood, but it might not be understood. And so then the coaching around that would be, what would you do next time? Would be go back and coach them around talking to that person and saying, could you agree to get that done by 5 o'clock?
Yeah.
The other person might come back and say, I can't do it by 5 o'clock. It's not physically possible, but I could get it to you by, you know, the next day at 2 p.m. And then you have an agreement. What would it take to get it by 5? Well, I need you to help. I need more help. So then you have an agreement, and then it's much less likely there's going to be disappointments and upsets in organizations. And that goes for, you know, loan officers calling on realtors and having expectations with the borrowers, getting documentations back, you know, all of those things. There's really clear agreements and communication that we need to have that is missing often.
Yeah. That's what we're saying. How do you bring that about in an organization? First of all, it's creating awareness of the importance of that.
Yeah.
And then I'm really fascinated with it because this is one of the topics that I consult in and do some coaching on. So I want to hear, and I want what I believe is those of us that are doing the same thing, we need to get together, and I like open kimono. Everything I've got, I want to share with you, and I hope I want to create an environment of open thinking or an open knowledge or open source code, I guess, so to speak, of what we're doing, what's working. We use the Berkman assessment is what we use in ours, and I look at, first of all, the various personality types, sanguine, phlegmatic, choleric, and then we have all the communication styles on top of that, where I mean, it's a complex Rubik's Cube of how we're wired, and learning how someone... what their language is so important. One thing that we speak in that, but then also that someone like a sanguine is going to want to be talked to differently than a phlegmatic and all the various, or a choleric. And when you understand the various personality types of who you're trying to communicate with, that, at least that's what I'm seeing in it. And we have a consultant, Berkman consultant, that works inside of our group that goes out and helps people to understand their personality types. And then we have another learning style person who comes in instead of you trying to train someone on top of that. So I'm interested and hungry to learn as much as we can and share as much of that as we can with the industry because it's needed.
I agree. I agree 100%. It's kind of like, it sounds like Berkman. I am a little familiar with that. There's DISC also.
Yeah, there's DISC, yeah.
Right. And so are they direct? Are they introvert? You know, how do you communicate with different people based on their styles? And a lot of it's around your listening and they're listening for each other. How do you generously listen to each other? How do you create collaboration that way? And you were asking about organizations. And one of the main things is that oftentimes, you know, you're brought in by the leader and they're like, something's going on with my team. Either they're not productive or we're not collaborating or, you know, there's disruption or dysfunction in some way. But it's always the leader who needs to set the stage, right? They're the ones who have to be even more collaborative, even more communicative, listen more deeply, and be direct with their employees and back to those agreements, like setting up very clear agreements. Otherwise, things fall to the side or they're not functioning the way they should.
This has really been encouraging. I mean, delighted that you're out there helping this industry and really focusing in on women to really help them. I mean, I'm sure you're focusing on anybody that will recognize the need for improved communication and coaching. So how can people get a hold of you?
They can get a hold of me on my website. It's just BronwynMorrissey.com. I'm also doing some programs with the MBA next year. I'm going to be doing a manager's loan officer's coaching program with them.
Awesome.
Yeah. Specifically.
Talk about that. How can people learn more about it? Is it going to be on a website?
It's on my website. It's connected with the MBA.
Okay.
It's on the MBA's website through the education channel.
Excellent. Are you doing, is it through webinar type?
Actually, how it works is we're going to do an assessment, I mentioned, a leadership assessment, and then we're going to do a 1.5-day workshop, and starts in April, and then there will be 6 months of coaching. So that's where you get into the customization and the individualization around what each individual manager needs to accomplish and what's the result they want to get to, and you coach from there.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah, so that's going to be a lot of fun.
That's going to be great. That's coming out in 2019.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Can't wait to learn more about it. Check it out. Thank you for joining us here today. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So for those of you who are just tuning in, this is Alice Alvey filling in for David Licken today. We just listened to an interview that Dave had with Bronwyn Morrissey at the Empower event that was around the same time as the Mortgage Bankers Conference last October. And what I'd like to do is a couple of things. First of all, just I hope everyone was able to pick up on how it is about, you know, a lot of what Bronwyn talked about was really global across the company, right? Isn't male or female. They're just ways to make sure that we all are better communicators. I love the point that she makes about creating co-agreements and even about how to potentially bring this into your organization. So I'd love to open up the floor to Andy and Joe. Andy, I'll start with you. I know we exchanged a few emails ahead of time, and in your segment you talked a little bit about career design, and I'd just love to get your thoughts on the ideas of Empower and organizations now trying to focus more on leadership building and making sure that's right for women and women resources as well.
Sure, absolutely. So this is a super complicated topic because it's impacted by individual psyche. So people's feelings about themselves, people's feelings about others, deeply seated feelings that can date back to childhood, frankly, can be hugely impactful in some of this because we can create our own obstacles. We can believe that we're not worth being heard. We can also believe others aren't worth being listened to. It's astounding to me how frequently I see that where people say they're listening, but they really aren't. And it's just horribly disrespectful. But there's a reason why it's more important for the person to think about what they want to say next than to listen intently to what the other person is saying. So one other element that can be helpful in this, aside from all the things they've talked about, is Toastmasters. So Toastmasters is an organization that allows people to practice public speaking. Part of the challenge that people have in career path development is, aside from self-inflicted obstacles, is not fully developed communication capabilities. And some of that can be worked on. It can be very unpleasant at first, but to achieve higher levels in a career is more than just being good at your job. It's also being articulate in your ability to communicate your ideas and your thoughts about your job or anything else in the business world. So part of that can be enhanced through Toastmasters. So much here to talk about to get people to overcome what they think about themselves. But that's my thought on that for now, Alice.
Thank you so much. I think that's fantastic, right? You really just, I think, hit the nail on the head for everybody to understand a big part of what this is. And we've been using the line a lot lately, even between my husband and I, going, are you listening to hear or are you listening to respond?
Yes,
and
exactly.
Throwing in Bronwyn's generously listen. Yeah, that's great. I love the referral for Toastmasters too, because that is something we're opening up for some of our future leaders here, is for them to get some public speaking training, because as you said, communication is a big key of it. Joe, how about you? Any thoughts on the Empower segment?
Well, I'm glad that you brought up the point that it had a whole lot more to do with the individual than it did whether that individual was a man or a woman. And I look back or think back upon the leaders and the organizations I was involved with, it always had to do with character. It had to do with results. It had to do with, do you lead people in the right direction? Never did it have to do with whether it's a man or a woman. So I think it really does just get back to the fundamentals of, are you confident in what you do? Are you able to lead people, again, in the right direction, not in the wrong directions? And are you able to produce results? We have a very easy industry for measuring things. There's, you know, whether it's value creation or quality or quantity, it's an easy industry to do that in. And so I think that there's an easy path for anyone that can achieve those results.
I agree, and I agree with your assessment of this industry. There are lots of opportunities for everyone, and a lot of us are examples of that. So thank you very much, both of you, for your thoughts on that. I do want to, I know we're just a couple minutes over our time, but I can't resist having both of you and giving you some dedicated airtime on the market. It is crazy, and every day there's discussions about portfolio retention and, you know, how do we manage that? Refis come in the door when, you know, as you heard on this audio recording that was made last October, there were some lenders who were thinking whether they were going to hang on into Q2 if things stayed like they did in Q4 and Q1 of last year. So now we've had this complete turnaround, and I'd love to hear your perspective on the market and rate volatility and what it's doing for lenders right now. So, Joe, can I start with you? Yield inversion,
sure.
I think. We were going to leave on
your
plate.
Yield inversion. the definition of that, I'm sure everyone knows, it's when the short end of the yield curve yields exceed the long end, and it's typically measured in, for mortgage banking, or the typical measure is the 2-year treasury note versus the 10-year. And briefly, last Wednesday, the 2-year note had a higher yield than the 10-year note. And it was like a basis point or two difference. Now we have seen that the spread between the two, the 10-year has exceeded the 2-year, typically over the last few months by maybe 20, 25 basis points. And the spread has begun to narrow. And in fact, it did go negative, but it has since widened back out. Now it's only about 5 or 6 basis points now. But I think there's been a lot made about this being a precursor to a recession. And truly, I think that there's so many other things affecting that are sort of controllable things, or, like the whole trade issues, the trade wars. That's sort of a created an event and something that could be resolved fairly quickly. I don't know that the trade differences will be resolved fairly quickly, but the impact of the trade situation on the economy could be corrected fairly quickly. And so, you know, I don't think that we're totally at a point where the inversion is a precursor to a recession. I think that the last 4 or 5 recessions have been preceded by an inverted yield curve. But typically it's been it takes a longer term yield curve inversion, I think, to really sway the market to the point where an expected recession is on the way. I don't think we're there yet, so I don't know how long the current yield environment's going to stay the way it is. You mentioned refis coming in. Right now, the markets have moved so much, they're coming in last week and they're gone somewhere else this week. So I know it's putting a lot of pressure on secondary apartments right now, trying to anticipate how much to sell forward, how much their pull-through rates are going to be. But, you know, I don't think we're at a point where we need to completely adjust our staffing requirements based on today's current volume, and we need to wait and see just how long and how low rates will go.
That's great insight. Thank you. And it's aligned with what we've heard, you know, folks talking about here. Andy, what would you like to add to that?
Well, Joe made a lot of good points, and there's a lot of complexity in and around it. I think where it comes driving home to independent mortgage companies, or any mortgage lender for that matter, is the volatility of the refinance transaction. So if you've got a pipeline filled with refis and the rates are going up, rates are going down, what happens when rates start to drop again and your customers all go, I want a lower rate, I want a lower rate. You've got it either locked on best efforts or you've got a in your TBA pool. And so what are you going to do? Because if you lose it, then you lose all the gain on sale. But if you reprice, and now you're going to get less yield, and you might even get a loss, but some's better than none. It's just it's highly complex, and it's important to be communicating the lock policies, the extension policies, the free flow down policies, and be proactive about it rather than simply digging your heels in. The other side of that is on the MSR side. So preserving the MSR, there's a number of tactics around MSR preservation. It's important to be mindful of this. If your MSR portfolio pays off, you're going to write off your MSR amount, which would be reflected in your books as a loss. And so the way to prevent the MSR from being run off is to preserve the MSR or replace the MSR. And a couple of ways to do that are is to be proactive in talking to your customers. When I was at Bank of America, we had a $35 billion portfolio, and one of my jobs was portfolio retention. So we actually actively engage with customers. Now, if you're retaining servicing, but you're using a subservicer, that gets harder to do because your interface with the customer is at the subservicer. So the big guys that are creating MBS and retaining servicing and doing it themselves are in the best position to manage MSR preservation. If you're retaining servicing and subservicing, you're less effective because it's harder to get in front of the customer because you're not the customer service a desk that's being called by the customer if they're wanting to do something differently. You also want to monitor the credit score activity and credit pull activity. You can sign up for services where if one of your customers has a credit pull, a mortgage credit pull, it will notify you of the event, and you can then contact the customer and talk to them about that to save the MSR. Now, there's a new strategy that's coming out more and more where some of the subservicers are allowing the servicers to have more access to the data, including supporting certain functions, potentially even customer service. So there's just a lot of detail around this, but it's important to be mindful of the rate volatility is something we've been facing in mortgage lending for a very long time. Back in the 80s, we had rates, mortgage rates at 13, 14, even 16% at one point, back in 1981,
yep.
And then it dropped to 12 by the 90s, and then 10 and 8 and 7 and 4 and 3 and so this is just a part of life, but you have to be proactive in managing it. So there you go, Alice. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Andy, and thanks for reminding me of when I got in the business and I had a fixed rate at one point of 21%. When rates went down to single digits, everybody thought it was miraculous. So, yes, Joe, back to you.
Just be aware of the fact that what we're seeing rate and yield movement in is typically treasury instruments, and treasury instruments are more volatile in this regard. They're preferred over mortgage-backed security instruments because, as Andy pointed out, mortgage-backed security instruments have prepayment abilities to it. But as a result, we're seeing big movements in treasuries that aren't necessarily consistent with what we're seeing in mortgage-backed security prices. So as your customers hear about this big drop, treasury yields have fallen far more than mortgage-backed security yields have. So they're reading about a 40 basis point drop in yield over the last month. That's not happened in mortgages. And the same's true like today. Treasury prices are off more than mortgage-backed security prices are. So just as you're discussing things with your customers, just know that because of that prepayment ability on the mortgage-backed security, investors are much preferring an instrument that's got the certainty of no prepayment, and that is in the form of treasury instruments.
Exactly.
Thank you. Thanks for the clarification, Joe. Well, lots for people to listen back to 3 and 4 times, and I think we'll need another show to be able to cover that. We have gone way over our time. Thank you both for chiming in. That's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in to the Lickin' on Lending Show. Please tell your colleagues about the show. That said, I just want to make sure we thank our sponsors for making this podcast possible, and that is Black Knight Open Mortgage, Finastra, Resex Warehouse Lending, a division of United Bank, the Mortgage Bankers Association, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, the CMLA, Velma, the Knowledge Coop, Vidyard, and A1 Assist. Thanks for listening, everyone, and have a great week.
You've been listening to Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.